Ladies and gentlemen, we are very excited to let you know that the Super Rugby Women's Competition is beginning this weekend. Starting on Friday, the Western Force will be hosting the Melbourne Rebels. On Saturday, the Waratahs hosting the Brumbies. And then on Sunday, the Reds versus the Drua. So there are three home games that you can be getting to make sure that you are there supporting our women as they put on our colours for whichever team across the Australian rugby landscape you support. I'm going to be heading to the Waratahs game because it is also, in addition to being an amazing spectacle in its own right, going to be held before the Waratahs v Blues as well. So get yourself along to Allianz Stadium on Saturday night, starting at 5 p.m. to watch the women and then stay on 7:45 for the men. Very excited for this comp to kick off, and go the girls.
Metres back. Bernard Foley's got the length. It's got the length. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby, where the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Ando. With me is Lockie, and typically you've got Mitch, where when the Reds bloody win, he's a turncoat, puts on a Reds jersey or a Reds hat. Mitch, you got the bucket hat on. I'm not going to talk to you, Lockie. How's your week been?
I'm good. I'm admiring Mitch's bucket hat, as a matter of fact, and thinking how great it is to have a little bit more maroon on our side of the ledger this week. But it's been a good week. The Reds win. The Tars oh so close. And you were both at that game. Ando, you first, mate. How was that experience?
Mate, it was an incredible experience. Really enjoyed it. Before we get to the game, I will just say a big shout out to a bunch of the guys who are just fans of Aussie rugby on social media. Some of them, well, actually, I think all of them listeners to the pod and followers on social media too. Had a good meetup at halftime. Got to meet a few of the absolute legends of Australian rugby and share a beer with them as well. Mitch needed to bring some good chat as well, but I'm not sure if he managed to do that. Mitch, did you enjoy the game?
Yeah, it was good. I think I was the only one that brought a beer to that, to the catch up. So I think that was what you were saying. Not enough chat, but at least someone brought beers. So I'll take that. Great to meet up with people that listen to the podcast at games. For those that are based in Melbourne, I'll be at the Rebels and Reds game this Friday night. So if you are there, shoot us a message on Instagram or whatever our social platforms are, and love to catch up with you guys at halftime as well.
Absolutely brilliant. Well, we've got a lot of rugby to talk through, but we do just want to get a couple of the basic announcements out of the way. First thing, I just want to thank everybody for their support with our promotion for the gold tickets to the Highlanders match. We had really good take up from listeners to the pod, and it was great just to be able to provide an opportunity for more fans to get to the games and sit in some quality seats closer to the action. So thanks everybody for your support and participating in that, and we'll see what we can do for future games down the track. Now, we do also want to give a big shout out to Owen C, Nick Wilson, and Mateli B, who are first, second, and third in our tipping comp over at Super Rugby Tipping. So congratulations, you three. Long may you continue to grace the top levels. Mitch and I will not reveal where we currently are, but Lockie, you're doing pretty well, mate.
17 at the moment, but I got lucky. I was tipping with the heart this past round gone, and it managed to come up Millhouse. So we'll see how long we stick around. I don't think it's going to be very long, though.
Yep, completely well said. Well, the basic run for tonight is that we're going to go through just a quick fly through of the Super Rugby, the Six Nations results, because there's some pretty massive results from over Europe from last night's matches. And then we're going to jump into all of the action from the round of Super Rugby Pacific. Particularly want to dive deep into the Reds versus the Chiefs, that absolutely massive encounter that we saw up north. And we'll obviously be touching on the other Aussie matches from the round as well. So Mitch, I'm sure there's something I've missed, or are we good to go on?
No, I think we're good. We're just good to get into the rugby chat. So let's get into it.
Alrighty, gents, before we jump into Super Rugby Round 3 wrap-up, we're going to talk a bit of Six Nations, and there's still one game to go in what's the fourth round of their fixtures up there, but two unbelievable games to unpack. from the Saturday night gone. We will start with the Italians. They have won their first home game since 2013. They've beaten Scotland 31-29 in an absolute humdinger in front of 70,000 people at Rome. A couple of famous names popping up for the Italians. Lewis Lynah, son of the Aussie legend Michael Lynah, made his debut, scored a try, but it was Paolo Garbisi, the man who's kicked them to so many wins in the past. He was up again, knocking them over from the tee to ensure that the Italians break their duck. Mitch, talk to me about this one, mate. What a win for the Italians.
Yeah, they play like a team possessed. Like they definitely wanted to win this one. They were up from it from kind of kickoff, really, getting that penalty from the first breakdown, and you could see how pumped the players were for that. Definitely put Scotland under so much pressure that forced them into making mistakes and pounced on it every which way they could. A very dominant performance by Italy in a lot of regards. I was quite interested with the news coming out that Lewis Lynah has decided to sign with Italy and that he's sort of been parachuted in, wasn't in the camp at the beginning of the Six Nations, has been brought in halfway through, now makes his debut, ends up winning scoring the match-winning try for Italy. Like, he's definitely a player of the future. Very interesting to see, like, he had the options of Australia, England, and Italy, and the fact that he's gone with Italy. I guess he wants to be a, 100 test cap player by the end of his career, where he's not necessarily guaranteed that at England or Australia.
Yeah, and Ando, terrific to see the Italians getting up for a win. Do you think this kind of achievement gets rid of those doubters about their place in the Six Nations for a little while longer?
Oh, look, definitely not. I think there's always going to be people who just want to crap on Italy left, right and centre. I think the point that really excited me was kind of the tactical maturity that the Italians displayed throughout this match. So France had exploited this last week, but Scotland have struggled with... they just don't seem to have the players who are effective at playing that sweeping role behind the first front line of defence. So their fullbacks or wingers will often be playing up in the line to try and widen the defensive line, but it's leaving them open for chips through and chips over the top. And that was what the French were able to exploit and what the Italians did again this week. And so that was just really impressive, not only to see them identify that, but execute on it multiple times throughout this game. So really impressive from them, and a competitive Italy in the Six Nations would be something wonderful to see, just to be putting more pressure on the other home nations to recognize and not the be-all and end-all of the world.
For sure. And speaking of home nations, a cracking contest again, this time at Twickenham, and it was England who got up over the Grand Slam favorites. They're very good at tipping themselves, Ireland, but it didn't work this time around. 23-22, and it was a last-gasp drop goal from Marcus Smith, dead in front, to put the Poms away. Mitch, massive result in the terms of the Northern Hemisphere rugby sphere.
Yeah, really interesting to see that Marcus Smith decided to slot that over. They had the penalty advantage at that point, and he was right in front of the sticks, and so kind of almost looked like he was stumbling as he took that shot. Got it and won the game by a point. Just really really good rugby smarts. That's one thing that Marcus Smith is really developing into, is a rugby smart player. There's teams down here in Super Rugby who'd be kicking themselves for not taking opportunities like that, particularly the Reds last week, the Waratahs this week, losing games by a point or more. Really smart tactically to take those opportunities. But yeah, you can't discredit England as all as much as they're at times a bit of a boring and one-dimensional team to watch. They definitely had Ireland's number this week and put them under a lot of pressure. Very exciting test match going both ways from both Ireland and England.
Yeah, and a big blow for the Ireland psyche as far as the Grand Slam's concerned, but it paints a really interesting picture now with both England and Ireland still in the contest to take out this year's Six Nations.
Yeah, definitely. So it leaves a pretty interesting final weekend of matches. So you have Wales versus Italy, who will be kicking things off, and they're just going to be the kind of gutter dwellers, unfortunately. It's pretty hard to say as a proud Welshman, but they are going to be seeing who is not picking up the wooden spoon for this competition. Then you'll have Ireland versus Scotland and France versus England. So here's the layout. If England can get a win with a bonus point, they will be able to, if Ireland lose without getting a losing bonus point, win. So England basically need to smash the opposition, and then Ireland need to absolutely royally stuff things up for them to not get the Six Nations title. Now, I'm not expecting Ireland to lose at home comprehensively to Scotland. That would be very, very surprising. And it would be it wouldn't be a bigger upset than Italy beating Scotland, I reckon. But it would definitely be something to talk about for a long time. And France at home against England is going to be a pretty challenging one. The point of interest there is that France really don't have anything to play for. It's not like they can win the competition. All they're trying to do is spoil England's party. So maybe with the history between those two countries, both in terms of rugby and general history, then that will be something that could potentially drive them forward. Who knows with the French way of playing, but I'm very excited to see the results for this upcoming weekend of rugby.
I think what also needs to be said as well is like we've got still one game to go this weekend. So there's a game tomorrow morning, our time, between Wales and France.
Oh, of course.
So if Wales end up getting up over France in that game, there's an opportunity there, and they lose next week against England. Like if England beat France at home, then France finish at the bottom of the Six Nations and Italy go on ahead of them, finishing fourth or fifth, depending on how they go. They have the opportunity as well to beat Wales next week. So, yeah, I mean, France were coming into the World Cup last year as favourites, and now they're potentially going to lose those Six Nations. And when you look at that team, really, is it just the lack of Antoine Dupont that's making these changes, or the squad rotation? It's really, really interesting to see how the mighty France has fallen.
I'm a bit sad that we haven't talked about the mathematical chance of Scotland winning by 76 points or more when they go to Dublin, but that's okay. We might leave that one in the dirt there, guys. Six Nations wrap. Done and dusted for now. Shall we jump into Super Rugby Pacific round 3?
Fantastic. Let's get into it. I'll take over from here. So the opening game of the weekend was Moana Pacifica hosting the Melbourne Rebels. Now, this game was played at FMG Stadium in Hamilton. Now, for those that did get to watch the highlights or the full game or catch this one on Stan Sport, it was not a pretty sight in terms of crowd attendance. Very interesting in the way of how when there's small crowd numbers at games like this that they don't show the crowd more. Like I thought it was really interesting from where the cameras were positioned, they had closed the far stand. So it looked like it was COVID times again. No one's in the crowd attendance. And very rarely did they actually show the crowd kind of cheering or getting into it. There was only a few thousand people there at most. Really, really interesting around kind of that sort of the support for Moana moving forward and the logistical side of things, but we won't focus on that at the moment. Let's focus on the rugby. So the final score was 29-23 to the Melbourne Rebels. This is their second win of the season. And before any of the other games took place, Melbourne Rebels were at the top of the table, which was really interesting to see considering all the things that are going on and the talk that they might be not in Super Rugby next year. And what were your thoughts on the Rebels' performance?
Yeah, the Rebels' performance was, I guess, it's good for them to get the win, obviously. So much has been said about their need to start the season well, and they definitely did not do that in round one against the Brumbies. And yet here they are sitting in the top four, I believe, at the end of this round of rugby. So that's quite impressive at this point. Now, one thing I will say is that wins have come against the Western Force and Moana Pacifica. So two of the teams that are probably not going to be challenging at the top of the ladder come the business part of the season. So the Rebels are going to be happy with the away win. They're going to recognize that they were able to hold on against a pretty strong second half comeback from Moana Pacifica. But yeah, there's still going to be a lot of work-ons. Lachie, what areas do you think both Moana and the Rebels are going to be looking to improve moving forward?
Well, you mentioned the Moana second half fight back, which was good, but I thought Moana penalised themselves out of the contest in the second half. It was a 7-3 penalty count after halftime, including those two yellow cards, one to Alan Craig and the other to Jacob Norris. And I thought that's really where Moana shot themselves in the foot. It was theirs to take, albeit in front of a pretty tough home crowd of, gee, I wouldn't think there's many more than 1,000 there in Hamilton. But for me, it was Moana just being too ill-disciplined when they needed to tighten up and shore things up. They had, you know, everything to play for, especially off the back of Julian Savea getting across the chalk for his record-breaking 61st try. That was a wonderful moment, especially after everyone thought that he'd got across in the first half with a huge run to the line. And this one, he just danced right over. 2-on-2, and Pepesana Patafilo just did a beautiful little hand movement, got the ball free, and Savea creates history in the top right corner, which was wonderful to see. But look, I thought the Rebels actually scrapped really well. And Mitch, I'm sure you have something to say on this for the boys up front. I thought the Rebels forwards were exceptional in this game.
Yeah, particularly that they lost Leota so early on. He did come back for them and play some more. Did he come back? Actually, I can't remember.
He had about 14 minutes all up before he eventually went off, but it was a bit of a yo-yo for those opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think he went off with a blood bin and then he might have come back on and then he went back off again. But yeah, worrying signs there blood bin, HI, whatever it ended up being. There was some talk that it was a blood bin, but worrying signs for Leota that he's not able to get big minutes. And this is, you know, he was out all last year. He's the club captain. You'd expect big minutes from him. I think, as you said, Lockie, the forwards really did stand up. Taniela Tupou coming off the bench. Really interesting to see how the Melbourne Rebels are managing his minutes this year. It's completely different to the way that the Reds have gone about playing Tupou for the past few seasons. Yeah, he started off on the bench in round one. He started the game last week, and this week he comes off the bench again. So having key minutes and having key involvements throughout the game is, I think, what's best for Tupou at the moment, and getting him sort of back up to match fitness. But as you highlighted, the Rebels or the Moana were ill-disciplined towards the end of this game and finished the game with two players in the sin bin. The fact that the Rebels actually put them into those situations, like they applied so much pressure that they forced Moana to make those mistakes and to be offside and to not roll away at the breakdown and for the referee to make those decisions. So it was a smart victory by the Rebels. And it's a big one moving into their home game against the Reds next week, which we'll talk a little bit more about on our Wednesday podcast. But let's move across now into the game of the Friday night, which was the Waratahs hosting the Highlanders' first home game of the season. And you and I were both there in attendance. Not the result that we were hoping for, 21-23 to the Highlanders. Tane Edmund had a kick on full time or in extra time to get the win and unfortunately missed it. A little bit deflating for some of the people that were there, but in terms of atmosphere, in terms of crowd engagement, I think it was up for what we've seen for the Waratahs for the past few seasons, which was good.
Yeah, definitely enjoyed it. I thought the crowd was excellent. I really wish the Waratahs would try and do more with technology and almost like an MC for the stadium to get the crowd more engaged and vocal throughout matches, because I haven't seen the official figures, but it would have been 15,000 plus. I'm trying to be conservative there. Like it was a pretty decent.
It was 13.5.
Oh, damn it. Okay. 13.5 though. I'll still take it. And it was a good crowd. And at times where the Tars were playing well and had some good moments throughout the game, it was very vocal and a really good experience to be there. I just think that the Tars can be doing more to get the crowd engaged, and they almost seem to be waiting for somebody, I don't know, like us, if we could commit to it, kind of leading like an active supporter section. Like they just need to invest in that to get it happening. But getting to the actual game, I really think the Tars got dudded at the end, and maybe someone else can talk about kind of the penalty position and that type of thing. But they never should have been put into that position in the first place. The Tars gave away way too many easy turnovers on kick restarts. And so there'd be a kickoff, they'd go for a seat, they'd give away a cheap penalty in, and the Highlanders would just kick three. Sam Gilbert racking up a fair few points throughout the game, just from the tee, from easy stuff that the Tars must be better at. Lockie, what was your read as the only non-Tars fan in the digital room right now?
My read was that the Tars lost it and Highlanders didn't win it. That was pretty clear to me. Tars had more ball, more territory. I think it was about 56% in their favour for both of those big stats. And they had all the ball in the last 10 minutes. And that wasn't necessarily in their patch, but they were the ones in charge of the pill. They were in control and they didn't make the most of it, which was a shame to see, because I would have loved to have a nice Trans-Tasman sweep again through this weekend. look, in attack, they carried further. They broke the line more. They beat more defenders than their Highlanders counterparts. But the Highlanders, to their credit, tackled their lives out. They missed stacks, but they really threw themselves at the line when they needed to. And when you combine that with Tane missing three off the tee, you really shot yourself in the foot, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was a bit of a frustrating a game in some elements as a Waratahs fan, particularly being there in at the stadium for it, because the Waratahs never really felt like they were in control of that game. The Highlanders were always the first to score and the Waratahs hit back. They only just got ahead at halftime through the penalty to Tane Edmed, but then the Highlanders came out early in the second half and scored a try, which again put the Waratahs on the back foot. So we need to be better in that element moving forward in the season, that we need to be dictating terms, kind of like what the Reds were doing in their game, and how we did last week against the Crusaders. Like, they have shown that they can do it. They just weren't doing it this week. And credit to the Highlanders. The Highlanders didn't allow that. There was one talking point that has come out of the press conference after the game that DC or Darren Coleman has highlighted, that he was a bit frustrated with the way that the scrum was officiated towards the end of the game. So for those that haven't seen the game, what ended up happening was the Highlanders had the ball and Tavatavanawai kicks it through in an attempt to kind of find touch and, you know, apply pressure to the Waratahs within their own 22. He ends up kicking it dead. So that ball goes dead in the 77th minute. 77th and a half minute. There's two scrum resets at that point. The Waratahs are down by 2 points to win the game. They're in their own half. The ball doesn't end up coming out of that scrum until 79 minute 30. So there's 2 minutes wasted of scrum resets, the referee not making a call and resetting. Now, Darren Coleman expressed his frustration in the way that that area was officiated and that he would have liked to seen the referee try to speed that up. I actually think that the fault there lies more on the players. Going back and watching that in replay, the Waratahs players had no urgency around that. They weren't acting like the game was in the balance. They knew they were in their own half with 2 minutes to go. They were happy to waddle up to that scrum. They were happy to let the Highlanders reset it and repack it. I think in future, if we are focusing on the act of speeding up scrums, particularly that minute, if a scrum does get collapsed by an opposition in that instance, instead of resetting, just go to a short arm penalty. Let's get the ball moving, because you don't want a game decided by a team that's intentionally slowing the game down. We're making so many strides to move that forward. So I guess that was frustrating. And the Tars, again, we've seen this across Super Rugby this year. As competitive as we are now becoming, and as much as the games are getting tighter, the Australian rugby players still aren't being as game aware or time aware or clock aware, making the right decisions at the right time. The Reds lost the game last week to the Hurricanes in extra time. The Tars not really giving themselves enough time. If they had gotten up with 2 minutes to go and got that penalty, missed that, then they still have time to have another shot at winning the game against the Highlanders, which they ultimately didn't. Ando, you had a question or a comment around a player?
Yeah, so one of the Highlanders players really impressed me. So, sorry, still a bit sick. Tanielu Talea. So he started the game at 13 for the Highlanders. He was immense. Being at the game, I still am not completely au fait with each of the Highlanders players, kind of like looking at them in person without a commentator giving me the names. But I just kept noticing this player throughout the game being devastating with his attack. He was just markedly bigger than the Waratahs backline, stronger, but also within that agile as well. He had a really good step, really good agility. And the try that he had within the second half was impressive without a shadow of a doubt. Now, the final thing I'll just quickly jump on before maybe we move on to another match is if you are listening when you're listening to this, I recommend that you take a look at Matty Tamua's Twitter account. And he put up a few really well-questioned videos. That's not a good word, but just some images on his Twitter account where he's identifying likely where the final penalty given by Damon Murphy was called and then where the final kick was taken from. Now, we were chatting about this before the pod aired, and one of the things that's interesting is that Damon Murphy does ask for clarification where the penalty should be taken from, which is completely wrong, what he should do. And still, where the kick is actually taken from is probably about 5 meters further wide and maybe 5 to 10 meters further back than it should have been, even at the most generous estimation of where the penalty was actually given. So it's just one of those things that yeah, the Waratahs should have won the game earlier in the match, definitely. But it just sucks when there's like a pretty fundamental thing that the TMO should be getting right that does not happen, and it contributes to your team losing. So it's a frustration, but the Tahs should have been better, especially after their great win last week.
Fantastic. Definitely. And for those that are Sydney-based, the Waratahs are playing the Blues this upcoming weekend. So if you haven't got plans yet, we will preview that on Wednesday. But if you haven't got plans yet, make sure you put that in your diary and get along to Allianz to support the boys in blue, whichever side that is. Let's move across now to the Saturday, which was the quadruple header, four games of rugby across the afternoon, which was fantastic. First game was played in Lotoka in Fiji. The Fijian Drua getting their first home game of the season, hosting the Crusaders, and they've done it. They've back-to-back beaten the Crusaders at home. The Crusaders are now 0-3 to start this season for the first time since 1996. It's just, we said it on our preview pod last week, New Zealand is crumbling. It is ceasing to exist. It has sunk into the ocean. The rugby world has been flipped on its head, which we probably have actually seen. If we realize that that was the turning point for some of these results. From that point, the Reds beat the Chiefs. Italy beat Scotland. Like, the rugby world has been flipped, all due to the performance of the Fiji Drua. Ando, what a fantastic performance by the Drua. Pretty dominant in a lot of facets of this game, and rightly won this game.
Mate, I'm just going to call it. I put a lot of predictions, and maybe it's like a bit of a scattergun thing. If you shoot enough bullets in the air, one of them's eventually going to hit the rabbit. And so I think that at this point of the season, I have shot the Crusaders rabbit. I did say at the beginning of the year that I'm not confident they're actually going to be the force that they have been over the last little while. And you know what? At this point in the season, is looking like I'm right. They're probably going to turn around and win undefeated the rest of the season and win the whole competition from here. But their backline just really is not that impressive anymore. I look at the players that are there, and I'm just not sold on them actually being a dominant force. You've got like Willie Hines, Taha Kamara, Martielli, Havili, Almua, Reese, and Fihaki. I think I said within the midweek predictor last week. It's not a team that's going to strike fear into the opposition. And the Drua playing at home with the incessant noise of their rambunctious and boisterous crowd. You need players that are used to that type of atmosphere, or that have the capacity to, in a tight moment, perform the way that's needed to. And they just don't have that across the squad the way they used to, particularly within the back line. So yeah, this result didn't surprise me. Lockie, that's me just hyping myself up. Do you want to talk about the actual game?
I would like to talk about a man called Celestino Ravatamanda, who might have not only the sexiest dreads in the business, but the sexiest legs in the business. That man scores tries for fun. He makes line breaks for fun. Let's talk through some of Ravatamanda's stats. So bearing in mind, the Crusaders got out to a 10-0 lead after about 20 minutes. So everyone's thinking, oh, here we go. Crusaders, they've lost two. Going to bounce back and start flogging some Fijians. Not the case. Ravatamanda starts going absolutely crackers. He finished up to go with his try in the first half with three line breaks, one line break assist, seven tackle busts, and ran for over 120 metres. Including an 80-meter run in the final 2 minutes from his own goal line. He's insane. So there's that incredible defensive scrum. And I'm going to fast forward all the way to the 78th minute. Defensive scrum, Fijians turn over the ball, and instead of clearing it, Ravatamanda goes, nah, just chuck it here, and goes 80 meters from behind his own goal line. The Fijians are so much fun to watch, and he embodies so much of what the Fijian Drua has brought to this competition. They've brought daring and flair, unbridled physicality and joy, and it's such a wonderful thing to see that in full flight. So I'm stoked that they got up. Couple of the scorers from this one, Frank Lamani, Evergreen, scored another try as well, and the young fly half is starting to finally come into his own, Isaac Armstrong-Ravula, the Moanga nephew and a bit of a clone in the same way that he jinks around, banked a couple of key penalties as well through that game, including one late to ice it. So amazing to watch them in action. And before I wax lyrical even more about the atmosphere there, I wanted to quickly shout out the Fijian Drua back row. So we talk so much about their backs, about the big men up front that do the work for them, but their back row absolutely pummeled the Crusaders. The back row between them got 5 turnovers and over 35 tackles, including Pelimomo. Oh, sorry, he was on the wing. No, Itoni Iwunga on the blindside flank. 3 turnovers, 18 tackles, 1 miss. He was a menace all game. So a huge rap on their back row, which is not something that you'd usually expect from the Fijians. You talk about the big boys up front. You talk about the damaging ball runners. But defensive back rowers are so important in Super Rugby with the speed of the game at the moment. And they are going to be a huge weapon in their arsenal going forward.
It's really interesting to see how the Crusaders have not bounced back this year. Every game this season, we've expected that, you know, that banter snap or the switch to be flicked for them to just all of a sudden play Crusaders rugby. It hasn't happened yet. So really, really interesting to see how Rob Penny does turn things around and they move on into this season. But let's keep moving through the games that have been played. So the second game of Saturday was the first home game for the Brumbies of 2024, hosting the Western Force. Now, the final score in this game was 22-19, and it's a pretty tight scoreline, and for most of this game, it was a pretty tight affair. The Brumbies just haven't looked comfortable for mine so far this season, and as good as the Western Force have been, and they put themselves into a spot to win this game, again, like the game against the Rebels in round 2, they just weren't able to ice things late. Lockie, what were your thoughts on the performance of the Brumbies in this game?
I agree with that straight-up assessment, Mitch. They were very un-Brumbies again. They had 5 line-out losses, which is so off-brand for them throughout the course of the game. And if it wasn't for Ben Donaldson kicking 50% off the tee, I think that the Force might have got up and done some damage there. And, of course, the card to Harry Potter for his really stupid aerial challenge, we've got to be honest, just after halftime. But from the Brumbies' side, I don't think they win without Blake Shopp coming on in halftime. That little bomb squad coming through from the Brumbies, Billy Pollard, who crossed the chalk, but Blake Shopp was a beast at scrum time. We've seen him in the past, you know, hype himself up and get around the boys after a scrum penalty, but he forced 4 in the second half from Loosehead, and he is the brick shithouse that Eddie Jones branded him as, and he scrummed like one. It was sensational, so a big shout to him. I thought that front row battle was great because Tommy Horton, I think, had a brilliant game for the Force as well. 8 from 9 lineouts, topped their carries. But it was just for me, Ando, it felt like the game never got going. What did you see out of this one, especially from the Force?
Yeah, look, I found that it was just one of those games where neither team were able to get the rhythm that I'm sure they wanted to impose upon the game. And so it required players to have individual moments. Ben Donaldson, I thought, was excellent. And I actually think he's been really, really good since he's made the move over to the Force. I feel like he's just been given a free rein to say, you are the 10, get settled. You're in there for the long term. We're going to back you. And I feel like his running game has been on show more than maybe what we've seen previously. Still have issues off the tee as well. And one particular miss was really costly. So in the 64th minute, it's 22-14 to the Brumbies. And Dono misses a pretty easy 3. So it would have taken them to 22-17 with 15 minutes remaining in the game. And you get a converted try. You win it from there. So it's just those types of moments that you need to keep applying pressure, scoreboard pressure on the opposition. And I feel like the Brumbies may well have cracked. One other point I'll quickly say before I then pass it on to Mitch is that if I was a Force fan, I'd be pretty filthy. So in the 77th minute, Harry Potter makes an amazing break down the far side of the touchline and kind of cuts inside. Corey Toole's chasing. And it was in no way intentional, but Corey Toole has kind of tried to throw his arm over coming from the right shoulder. He's tried to throw his arm over into the tackle and then has come through and just full on punched Harry Potter in the face in the process of the tackle. And then Harry Potter cops a knee coming forward from another player coming across and spills the ball. And so it's a knock on. If they'd watched that again, I think it should have been a penalty for accidental foul play, something like that, because it was a clear punch to the face. Like, or you could call it a swinging arm to the face, but it was something that wasn't pulled up at the time. So Lockie, those were kind of my reads on it as well. Just a few moments, whereas Force fans, you think we were in the fight, but you've got to be better to be able to clinch it against the Brumbies at home.
Yeah, I agree. And in the same token, gents, the Force conceded 11 second-half penalties, which is so ill-disciplined, especially you're coming up against the Brumbies at home. You've got them on the ropes after a pretty dominant first half from you, and then you give away the card and you penalise just a bit like Moana. They just ping themselves out of the game there. Were there any things from this hit out, Mitch, before we move on?
Yeah, that was the point I was going to highlight, was the fact that as good as the Force were in that first half, they really let themselves down in that second. They scored that great try to, I think it was Harry Potter that ended up actually scoring it, but it came back for an obstruction that was just unnecessary, didn't really need to happen, and he probably would have made the gap and made that hole anyway if the prop didn't hold back Darcy Swain. So, yeah, little things like that, just consistently doing the wrong thing. Harry Potter come through and taking out Swain in the air. I mean, look, I'm a little bit of two minds in that one. As a Western Force fan, I thought that Potter did everything he possibly could as the jumper moving into contact. He had his eyes on the ball. I didn't think it warranted a yellow card. I thought, if anything, it was probably the Brumbies' fault that both the lifters let go of Swain as soon as the contact was made, so they didn't bring him to the ground. Like, as a jumper, it's your responsibility to take a player down. Even if there is contact, you can't just let go. And that's what both Slipper and the other prop did, which ended up causing Swain to end up landing on his back. So a little bit hard done by there. Did it warrant a yellow card? I would have been happy with a penalty there. But yeah, I think the Western Force had their opportunities, didn't take them, and then their ill discipline was what caused them to not win this game, unfortunately. Let's keep moving. So the next game of the weekend was the Hurricanes hosting the Blues. Now, the final score in this one was 29-21 to the Hurricanes. We all haven't had a good opportunity to watch much of this game, so I don't think we'll focus too much on it, other than to say that the Hurricanes have been Ando's bogey team. He stated in the offseason that he didn't think they were going to be any good at all, and they're currently number one on the table. So they've got a point to prove to Ando there. And maybe you should start saying some bad things about the Waratahs so they can get a few wins as well. And
yeah,
let's move into the game of the weekend, the one we're all here to chat about, and that is the Reds getting the victory against the Chiefs. 25-19 is the final score. Lockie, you're our resident Reds fan. How good was this?
Oh, look, for starters, I've got to put my hand up and admit that I wasn't there, and I'm furious that I wasn't. We had a family birthday party that we were rudely requested to come along, and I could hear Suncorp from where we were, and I heard enormous cheer at about full time as I was following them, and I thought, either it's all the Kiwis that have piled in and the Chiefs have done us here, or we have pulled off something amazing, and they did. Boys, 23 phases of defense. They did it again. It was the exact same as the round match against the Chiefs over in New Plymouth last year. And they've pulled it out of nowhere. 23 phases defended in their 22. And young fly half, Harry McLaughlin Phillips, of all people, probably the smallest bloke on the paddock, gets over the ball, steals that turnover from Damian McKenzie, and it's curtains. I tipped him. I believed with my heart. I didn't believe with my head. But it's happened, and I need someone non-biased to go through this. Otherwise, I'm going to talk up every player for a start. So, Ando, mate, did anyone see this coming for start, and then what stood out from the game?
Look, I think we'd seen improvement with the Reds under Les Kiss, without a doubt. They'd taken a lot of the enthusiasm and commitment that had been developed under Brad Thorne, and he seemed to be working towards a little bit more structure that was providing a bit more freedom for players. One player I do just want to shout out for the season so far is Liam Wright, co-captain. His return to fitness and the fact that he's been playing big minutes for the first three games of the season is, in my mind, providing the opportunity for Harry Wilson and Fraser McWright to steal the limelight. And without a player like Liam Wright doing a dirty work in tight, it means that Harry Wilson can't combine on the edge there with Fraser McWright for that brilliant, brilliant runaway try. So that's just one point that I want to put up there. And I think it just speaks to the good direction that Les is taking the team in. Although I will say I'm not confident that there's a consistency yet. I don't know. I just feel like I just feel that maybe this is just an Australian rugby supporter. You're kind of hedging your bets. So you're not willing to kind of back your team week in, week out, expecting them to win. You hope.
Not willing to dream at all. Yeah. Willing to dream.
No, there's a dream. There's a dream, but then there's a gnawing seed of reality and experience that eats away at that dream. So anyway, I've just been really been impressed, particularly by Liam Wright and the way that the Reds have looked so far under Les Kiss's guidance. And Mitch, I think that's been one of the key things, has been that influence that Les Kiss has had over this team.
Yeah, I think leading into halftime, I was nervous as an Australian rugby fan, as a partial Reds fan. As good as the Reds had been in that half, they had had so many opportunities that they had not capitalized on. They had three or four line breaks that they ended up just putting the ball to ground and not finishing off, which would have been, I was just thinking that, you know, the Chiefs are going to come back here. It's going to be tight. They're going to end up winning by a point or two. And those are the opportunities that we're going to look back on and say that's where they lost the game, unfortunately. But the Reds didn't do it. They hung on. They kept them out. They went on to win the game. I need to take my hat off, particularly in that first half performance, to Suliasi Vunivalu. I mean, we've been talking him as just this sort of nothing player for, 2 years now, and just waiting to see him do something worthy of, you know, making the starting side at the Reds, making the Wallabies World Cup squad, all of this. But Les Kiss seems to be the first person in Australian rugby who's been able to actually incorporate him into a game plan. The amount, like, what was it, three line breaks that he made in that first half alone, and if he just, you know, didn't put the ball to the boot and found a player on the inside, they'd go in for another try in that half and go into halftime a little bit further ahead to the Chiefs. But you can't fault his effort. Maybe his defense still is a big work on for him, but we're starting to see him inject himself into the line. This week particularly, he had a really clear knack of finding a hole, whether he was finding that prop, running across, sort of crabbing across the field, and then directing at a prop and just running at their outside shoulder, busting through the line. Yeah, really exciting to see him in full flight. I don't know yet if he's still like 100% fit or confident, because he doesn't look like he's running at 100% capacity, but still, he was really impressive in that first half. Lockie, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, Sully, again, the rocks and diamonds sticks out to me because there was so much good in attack. And then out of hand, I mean, the kick that was charged down, but I think it was Manaki Silby Ricket came through and flooded him in his 22. That led directly to Sean Stevenson's try in the far corner about a minute later. So there's still so much that needs to be worked on, but we're seeing the reasons and the athleticism behind a bloke that won two NRL titles and scored 30 tries a season. Clearly he's got talent, no one doubts that, but if it can be weaponized under Les, then he's going to be a big asset moving forward. And then it gets exciting when you think, well, Jordy Pataia comes back into the frame at some stage soon. Who goes out of that back three at the moment? Because Matt Greeley was great as well. Jock Campbell was really solid. And then Sully's banging down the door as well at the moment in attack. So plenty to like about that competition. A couple of people to highlight. Liam Wright was on my list. He does so many of the shitters, hitting rucks, pulling people out of mauls, doing all the stuff off the hard balls. But Fraser McWright, again, is stepping up in the big moments. So much of what has been spoken about Fraser McWright is that he's great at Super Rugby level, but he hasn't dominated a season and he hasn't held on and made that gold jersey his own. He's stepping up in the moments now. So just before halftime, after the Chiefs scored, he was bang straight over Luke Jacobson before the halftime hooter and earned a penalty so that they went up 15-11 rather than 12-11. He did another huge turnover. I think it was in the 52nd minute straight after Sean Stevenson's try that led for another shot at goal for Harry McLaughlin Phillips. So he's really quick on that counter-attack. And it's a bit what we talked about with teams that are able to just hit straight back after restarts. It's such a good skill. And having a seven that can fetch and get over that kick chase early is massive. And it goes with, you know, 19 tackles and a stack of other work. And before I throw to Ando, I got to talk about Harry McLaughlin Phillips quickly. Kids 20 came on and was so assured after Tom Liner got bashed around by an absolute dog shot, let's be honest, from Sammy Penny Finau. Hit him late, no shoulder wrap. How that's not a card, I'll never know. But
was that Liner?
Yeah, sorry, it was Tom Liner. Say McDermott? Oh, sorry. But yeah, Tom Liner just got folded like a deck chair.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Harry McLaughlin Phillips comes on, he kicks everything off the tee, He puts it boot to ball for Josh Fluke's try, that super bounce that finally favoured an Aussie team for once. And then he comes then he comes up trumps with the turnover at the end. That is a massive shift from a bloke that was playing Hospital Cup this time last year.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah, Ando, you've got a hot take for us.
My hot take is that when Jordy Pitaia comes back, he should be returning via the bench. I've said this for a long time, but Jock Campbell's best position in this team is 15. And I really don't like the fact that he keeps getting shunted to the wing in preference for Jordy Pitaia. And I think that Matt Greely is one of those really quality talents that needs a bit more game time. And Jordy Pitaia is a bit of a glass cannon at the moment. And I'm just not convinced that he's got that consistency at the moment to enable him to just supplant and change the balance of that back line. I'm not sure if you need two strike runners playing at 15 and 11 with Vunivalu as the other one, and then Jock Campbell on the other wing. I just think that it's a much better balance when you just have Vunivalu as that strike back three player. And then Greely can be a bit more of the dancing feet with a decent kick as well. And then you get Jock Campbell to be that kind of second. He can fill in and slot into the back line if he needs to on attack, but also just be excellent at generaling other players around the place. So I just think the balance of the back three is better without Jordy Pitaia in starting there. But he's so versatile that he can be fitting across kind of 11, 13, 14, 15 as well if required. Lockie, is that outrageous for me to say?
No, it's all about finding that balance, right? I think you're pretty bang on with the where do you need your strike weapons and how do you balance it with Campbell, who is clearly a 15. Can cover wing, but so safe at the back of the house. So will we see maybe Pitaia return via the wing? I think that could be an option under Les Kiss. Could he return through the centres? If there's further issues to Paisami, we know that Pitaia's played 13 before, but Josh Fluke seems to have the house set on his 13 jersey at the moment. So all we can say is that it's fostering good competition. You've still got players like Lawson Crichton, who can cover 10, 12, 15, who's been battling away for the development team. Floyd Aubrey's still on the wings. Tim Ryan's a young winger that's getting lots of wraps up here that's knocking on the door. So for the first time in a long time, we could probably say that the Reds have a bit of depth across the park, and that's an exciting thing if you're a Queensland fan. And I think despite talk about Australian rugby in depth across the teams that have bagged their wins early this year, we are seeing depth coming off the bench and we're seeing good punch from that, which is really exciting. I'll quickly wrap up with this one from the Reds before we get into a bit of final business, gents. One penalty. The Reds only gave up one penalty in the entire second half. Can you remember a year where any team that's been under a Brad Thorne or even Australian Super
Rugby team under a Les Kiss, even?
Well, exactly. We had those questions incoming from London Irish and the penalty record, and everyone's thinking it's high risk, high reward. But that is disciplined footy on your own goal line. Props to defensive coaches, forward coaches, that team at Ballymore. I don't know what they're doing, and I don't know how long it's going to last, but it's doing something.
It's really, really exciting to watch this Reds team at the moment. And as last week, particularly as a Waratahs fan, watching them against the Crusaders, seeing Aussie teams dominate games and holding the Kiwis out is fantastic. So often the narrative has been, the Kiwis are dictating terms and the 50-50 calls go their way and the bounce of the ball goes their way. But it's not happening at the moment. Super Rugby is so competitive this season. There was no game. The highest gap in this round is 10 points against the Crusaders and the Drua. And as we said in our wrap-up of that game, the Crusaders scored those 10 points in the first 20 minutes and then didn't score another point. Like, the fact that each game is so tight is so exciting, and it's something that this competition has needed for so long. It's, as for fans of just rugby, it's fantastic to see the competitiveness. And Lockie, you'll have a lot to say about this as a Queensland-based Super Rugby fan, but the announcement came just before kickoff on Saturday afternoon that the Queensland Reds are going to be playing a midweek test match against Wales. It is technically being played on Friday, though, so whether that's midweek or not. In June, July, when Wales are out here for their two tests against the Wallabies, they're adding a third game against the Queensland Reds. Now, the only question I have about this is, as great as it is for Australian rugby, who gets to wear the red jersey?
Oh, I dare say we're going to be forced into our white jersey, but it's a good chance to rep the Indigenous kit. I'm not sure how often we're going to get to wear it, but that's by the by. Great to see tour matches coming back. I absolutely love them. I think they're brilliant to test the depth of touring sides and also give some of our Super Rugby boys, whether it's the Reds, Tars, Rebels, Force, Brums, whoever, to have a crack at an international team. It's a career milestone. So keen for them. Friday, July 19, Suncorp Stadium. I think it's going to be a brilliant addition. I won't talk too much on it because I've already out-redded everyone here, but we do have some Super W that I know that we want to get through. Ando, do you want to get us started on that, mate?
Yeah, mate. Super W is kicking off this week. So round one is going to be beginning over in Perth with the Western Force hosting the Melbourne Rebels at HBF Park, followed up by, on Saturday night, the Waratahs hosting the Brumbies, which is going to be the curtain raiser for the Waratahs Blues at Allianz Stadium, followed up by Sunday's match, which is the Reds versus the Fijian Drua, which is at 12 p.m. at Ballymore, the spiritual home of rugby. And so very, very excited for this to kick off. I was just looking at my calendar then because I didn't think I'd be able to get out to the game. My missus is away next weekend. And I was like, I can't take my two boys to a game starting at 7:45.
Yeah, you can.
Well, you know what I can take them to? A game starting at 5 p.m. Super I can dub. Take them to that. So I'm going to take my boys to the Super Dub game, and then I'm going to go home when the men's kick off afterwards. So that's going to be a bunch of fun. I'm very, very keen to take my boys out there. And please make sure you get along to support the women wherever you are across Australia. They are a wonderful bunch of players and they play good quality rugby and it's great to get behind them. So make sure you get along and yeah, keen to see the season kick off. Mitch, it's pretty exciting, especially with the new coach, high performance director, Jaime Fernandez as well in town. There's going to be a lot happening within women's rugby in 2024.
Oh, there really is. And I don't want to be that guy that has to pull you up a little bit, but the Super W is no longer called the Super W this year. It's actually Super Rugby Women. So the name has been expanded. It is called Super Rugby Women this
Love
year.
It.
They've got
Love
a, it. A fancy new trophy. I don't think it's got a name yet.
Oh,
if those
that's cool.
if people haven't seen the trophy, I'm going to I'm dubbing it the Easter egg. I think that's what it looks like to me. It looks like it's a rugby ball. It looks like very Indigenous, but to me it looks like an Easter egg. Anyway, it's a really sick trophy. It's going to look so good at Tars HQ when the Waratahs women just go undefeated again this season. Yeah, really exciting to see what is coming up in the women's space this year. Really looking forward to, you know, WXV1 being played here in Australia. You know, we've got tests against the Black Ferns, which with Joe Yap, the sky's the limit. We might be able to get that first maiden victory against them. Super W Women's kicking off this weekend. Really, really great space and really good opportunity for the sport of rugby in the women's landscape in 2024. Gents, we've probably pushed through our sort of 35-minute mark for the podcast this week. Lockie had a lot to talk about in his Reds victory. Before we finish things off, I just want to go through the table for those that aren't too aware of it. So the Hurricanes are currently in top spot, undefeated so far this season. Take that, Ando. Chiefs currently in second place with the one loss this week against the Reds. Reds in third place, which is fantastic to see. Had that one loss last week by 1 point to the Hurricanes. Melbourne Rebels in fourth place. So how good is it to see that there's two Aussie teams up in the top four at this point of the competition? Let's hope it can continue long into the rest of the season. In fifth place, we have the Blues, who got the loss this week against the Hurricanes. In sixth is the Highlanders. Seventh is the Brumbies. Eighth is the Waratahs. Ninth is Moana Pacifica. 10th is Fiji and Ndrua. As much as it hurts me to say, 11th is Crusaders and 12th is Western Force, but it really does feel like it should be 11 Western Force and 12 Crusaders at this point in the season. Gents, that's it for this part of the podcast. We'll be back later in the week for our preview episode for Super Rugby Pacific Round 4. Anything else we haven't said or you wanted to say before we sign off?
All good, my friend.
All good.
Fantastic. Well, thanks everyone for getting to this point of the podcast. Keep an eye on our socials. We will try and see what we can do with the Waratahs this week and see if we can get a code extended for you to attend the game against the Blues. We'll be back on Wednesday to update you on that and to do our preview for Super Rugby Pacific Round 4. We will see you then. Signing off, everyone. Bye.
Bye.